Hello and welcome to IndieInterviews.com, part of the IndieFeed.com network, a weekly podcast where we interview independent musicians to get their perspective on their music, their history, and the world around their art. On the show, your host Garrison Reed sits down with Seth Olansky of Akron Family. Seth discusses the band's origin and influence from New York, their changing studio approach, and the band's similarities with Young God Records' Michael Girard.
When, you know, we sent those CDs to Michael, he came out and saw us live. He ended up really, what we were sounding like live was way different because the stuff at home in Fruity Loops was one thing, and then in the rehearsal space, we were just doing totally different stuff.
After moving to New York in 2002, Akron Family soon began a relationship with Angels of Light, Michael Girard. The musician slash label owner asked the band to tour with him as Angels of Light and to record and assist him on the split 2005 Akron Family slash Angels of Light. Here's a snippet of I'll Be on the Water from the 2005 self-titled release.
I know you know. I think our love's the best. If you have to stay, I'll be on the water, catching the next wave. You can meet me where it breaks.
The band is currently midway through a U.S. tour, including early February dates on the West Coast.
In another interview, you commented on New York City and how it's impacted your music. Is this something definable?
I think that the band was formed pretty concurrently with the time that Miles and I had both moved to New York City. We'd been there for a few months before we started playing together. And so I think that, you know, being in New York City affected us as individuals and how we lived. And I think as much as it affected our music, and since it was all kind of happening at the same time, we were learning how to live in New York City and we were starting this band, we were making this music, I think that, you know, the wealth of ideas creatively that are in abundance in New York City influenced the music, as well as just like living and working in New York City and all these things kind of defined what we were. So that definitely had an impact on, you know, ourselves and the band and our sound as well.
I know that y'all work a lot with Fruity Loops. Have you ever felt limited by what you can do with Fruity Loops?
I mean, Fruity Loops only was about maybe a year or two of what we were doing. It was like I got this cheap Dell computer, and we had a loft out in an area called Bushwick of Brooklyn, and Fruity Loops was what we had when what I was talking about before. When Miles and I first met, when we first started recording, we had this little, I had a digital four track, like a Zoom four track, and we were recording in my apartment on that by itself. And then my roommate at the time, like, I was just subletting. I didn't even know him, and we weren't supposed to use his computer, but like at night when he was asleep, we would sneak onto his computer and like dump from the four track onto his SoundForge and then burn the CD and then erase the files. You know, it was pretty funny. But so I got this Dell computer I like pirated like Cubase and like Sonar and all these other things, but like none of them really worked that well because it was a junky computer. So Fruity Loops was the one thing that worked on there. So we had this four track and we had SoundForge as a sound editor, and then Fruity Loops, and it was just what we had at the time. And so the process ended up becoming like doing takes onto this four track, sending them in through this cheap, you know, stereo into the computer, into the SoundForge, the editor, cutting them up into these tiny little pieces, because this was old Fruity Loops before. Fruity Loops now has, like, you can put on full audio tracks, but no, this was old. This was pre that. So you couldn't, the only way you could play a long audio track was if you triggered it and then, like, let it play as a loop, because it had, the weirdest thing about Fruity Loops is when you trigger a thing on this block, it would keep playing until the audio was done. It wouldn't play as long as the cell, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It would play as long as that audio was. So you could do all these weird things where you could trigger things loads of times and they would layer over themselves. It just was kind of, it ended up having all these like fallacies that ended up being kind of neat. So, but it was so painstaking to like do these audio takes and cut them up into all these like little chunks and build the songs this way. And so we did at the house about kind of like 2 CDs worth of music that were on that way. Mm-hmm. I actually liked the first one a little bit better, but then those became some of the stuff we chose to use on the first album. So it's album. Kind of
like drafting.
Yeah, I mean, at the time it wasn't drafting, but what happened was when, you know, we sent those CDs to Michael, he came out and saw us live. He ended up really, what we were sounding like live was way different, because the stuff at home in Fruity Loops was one thing, and then in the rehearsal space we were just doing totally different stuff. At home it didn't have so much to do with about like 4 people with the band. It was like, you know, one of us would lay something down, and then I ended up working on the computer a lot. Miles would work on the computer too. And it was kind of more of like a one-person thing, and the band was really a cohesive unit where we were building totally different songs as a group. Yeah. And performing them live. It's kind of totally different sound. Michael saw that. He liked that even more. Then when it came time to like go in the studio and do the album, we were all planning on just doing an album like as a band and focusing on that side of things. And he kind of went back and listened to the stuff that was recorded at home and said, you know what, there's a lot of good stuff here too. So the idea was to kind of try and mix it.
Yeah.
And I think it worked kind of well. I think in the end, we ended up kind of portraying more of what the home sound kind of was like than the live sound. But it ended up working to our advantage, because then we went on tour with him and our live sound really developed. So when we got back from that, we recorded The Split. And so you kind of have these two, you know, opposing kind of views of us, this kind of like home, delicate, you know, one-on-one, layer by layer kind of sound, like the first album, you know. Which is like sonically kind of all over the place, because some of it was recorded in the studio, some of it was recorded at home, some of it's like an SM58, then there's like a vocal done with a Neumann, you know, and then there's like a car driving by. And then there's just the kind of the snapshot of us in the studio playing our songs live.
I read that you really like what comes across live, so much that you seemed in the interview interested in maybe a live record. What is it about the live show that you feel is absent from the records?
I don't think I would necessarily say that we should make a live record, just because, I mean, it's my general viewpoint that live is so much different than recording. Mm-hmm. You know, that I just think, I mean, usually live, what I really want to go see is like some kind of, just me personally, I would like to see something that's kind of improvised or instantaneous or happening in the moment. You know, like if I go downtown and see like these improvisers in New York City, and it's like, it's just, it's happening with me at that time, and it feels very present and real. And there's this sense that, you know, whether or not they're playing a song or they're improvising or whatever's going on, there's a sense that everybody in the room's kind of in the same space at the same time. And I think that can happen when you listen to a record, but it happens differently. Like, if you listen to a recording of someone improvising, I think it's actually like harder to get to that place. Whereas mm-hmm. if you listen to something timeless, like, you know, Abbey Road, or, you know, some like timeless classic recording, or like Blonde on Blonde, or like something like this, it actually takes you to that, a similar place for me.
Okay.
Because it's constructed. So I think recording wise, I think, I don't know, I think the construction helps to create that kind of space. Live, I don't know if the thing that really, like, there's that thing that you really feel live, and then when you listen back to a recording of the live show, it's fun to listen to, but it doesn't have that same spark of the moment, you know?
The like passing of it, you know, like,
yeah, I mean, it's just such an experience with bodies there and like the sound. That's kind of hard to capture. So, yeah. But I think that the split that we did with Angels is for us kind of, you know, we mostly, it's all, you know, like really like one or two takes of each song and then maybe some vocal overdubs, but really raw, and just we did it in a few days, and that was the idea, was to kind of like present something clearly as like just us playing as a band.
Yeah.
You know, us playing as a band with Michael, Angels of Light. And just kind of trying to present, you know, as honest as we could what we were sounding like at the time. So it's like a snapshot, you know.
Yeah. Being on his label and working heavily with him, what sensibilities does the band share with Michael Gear?
That's kind of funny because, you know, when we first sent him some demos, or those CDs that we had done at home, and I wasn't really familiar with Swans. I knew more about him through a little bit of Angels of Light, and also from like having seen Devendra early on in New York, and I knew a guy in Kala, and I knew he'd put that out. So I sent him the CD. We started meeting with him, and he was like interested. He's like, I want to send you a bunch of stuff from the label. So he sent us stuff from the label, and started listening to more Angels of Light stuff, you know, and like the newer one at the time, which was Everything's Good Here, Please Come Home, and then like some of the stuff off of New Mother, and like there were like these passages, like mostly instrumental, that like really reminded me of some of the things we were doing at the time, and so I just thought it was really funny that. We kind of shared a similar aesthetic in certain ways, even though, you know, I had never really heard Angels of Light up to that point, you know. I think there's certain senses of things that we share, and then aspects of recording. I think like trying to create or capture a space or a particular moment. But then again, like there's also like ways in which he and I, or he and us, are really like very different, very opposed, and it kind of creates, I mean, sometimes it creates a tension that's hard to work with, but it also, like, he really challenged us, and I think we're all pretty, you know, I think we're all pretty accomplished musicians technically, but not necessarily, like, we hadn't recorded a lot, but I think that, you know, having someone like that's that intense of an individual, like, really stand up to you and really like say, you know, before he was there, we would just make decisions because we made decisions. Like sometimes they were the right decisions, sometimes they were just things that we did automatically. And he really like challenged us. And sometimes it was annoying because it slowed things down, but he really forced us to think why we were making decisions, like why we were going to record it this way, why did we want it to sound this way. And I think in the long run, it helped us in the short run to be more clear and, be more aware of what we're doing, and in the long run, I think it's just going to help us to be like stronger artists, and that we figure out what we want to do and we do it, as opposed to just doing what we can do or doing what comes automatically, you know.
Yeah.
Lightning bolts in my chest. I know you know. I think God loves the best. If you have to say.
Thanks for listening to IndieInterviews.com. Weekly podcast where we interview independent musicians. More information about our guests today, Akron Family, can be found on their website, akronfamily.com. Music samples in this show are from their 2005 self-titled release, Akron Family, available on Young God Records. For information on this release, visit younggodrecords.com. For a complete track of I'll Be on the Water, visit indiefeed.com. For more information, including a transcription of this interview, please visit indieinterviews.com. For feedback on this podcast and the materials used in its production, send your thoughts to indieinterviews@indieinterviews.com. Thanks again, and see you next week. Dream.